This is going to be a unique video. I am laser focused on holding Trump and his administration accountable for the dozens of deaths that we have seen in Texas, and I'm sure we're going to see more as these cuts continue to manifest over the next few months and years. I mean, cuts to USAID, cuts to the National Weather Service, to the VA will all manifest in different ways. That's why we're building something to hold Trump accountable. I recently talked to journalist Chuck Todd about my journey, how we got here, and how we're going to beat Trump. I urge you to drop a like and watch until the end.
Well, this is Chuck Todd. We have a special sort of YouTube edition here, sort of a derivative of the Chuck Todd cast, where I want to spend some time meeting the next generation of political leaders and influencers and journalists, both on the left and the right. I want to have these conversations. The only rule is you can't be over 30. Because as we all know, you don't trust anybody over 30. And I think I'm going to ask that question to my first guest of this Meet the Next Gen folks here, Adam Mockler. He's 22. Some of you may already know him quite well. He's got over a million, nearly 1.5 million YouTube subscribers. Does daily uploads of news commentary. Has had his share of viral interviews. He's 22, like I said, and he joins me now. So, Adam, let me start with that first question. Do you trust anybody over 30?
Some people. Is something going to happen to me when I turn 30? What happens to me in 8 years? I'm scared.
I know. You're going to find out. Oh, now you've become the establishment, right?
Oh, like, is that what happens to me?
That might be what happens.
While I'm still youthful and anti-establishment, I guess, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk about your origin story. You know, I always say this, that, look, we all, you know, people. I will often have people come up to me and say, you know, something X, or you think this, or should I think this? And I always say, hey, all of us have one vote. All of us have the same amount of ability to influence or not influence in any given way. But give me your origin story. What got you into politics?
Yeah, it's really like that quote where it's like the average overnight success takes 5 years rather than being overnight, because I've been doing this specific job for 2 years in this industry, but the YouTube channel that currently has 1.3 million subscribers, I made that when I was 9 years old. In private on that YouTube channel, there are hundreds of videos of me after school at 9 years old, like playing Minecraft or Call of Duty. But in doing that, I picked up these really savvy editing skills. I would loved editing as a kid all the time. I would edit these like Minecraft videos, Call of Duty videos, and relentlessly upload them. Then when I got into high school, I kind of stopped doing that because I wanted to get girls. I didn't just want to make Minecraft videos all the time, right? But I was
also
very
good for getting girls.
Minecraft no, videos. Apparently no. Not. I don't know. At a certain age, you know, maybe when I turn 30 again, it'll be good.
Yeah,
you know,
right? You never know.
But no. But also, I was always politically inclined. So in fifth grade, I got kicked out of class for debating my teacher on gay marriage around the time the Supreme Court was talking about this. Honestly, I was probably being pretty disruptive in class, but I was debating. And then when I graduated high school, I went to college in Northwest Indiana for a year, and I took this film class and I was editing, and I was like, wait a minute, I'm still pretty good at editing. What the hell? I forgot how much I loved this. And then I realized there's a Trump rally coming up. So this idea that was in my head for like a year, like, okay, I can hit the field at a Trump rally, edit a video. I finally executed on it. And I sent out a bunch of emails. I found a cameraman last minute. We went to the Trump rally and it went viral. Now this cameraman that I met there, I used.
Why did it go viral? What was the content that you think made it go viral?
There's a few different reasons. It was just baby-faced me asking simple, pointed questions towards Trump supporters, and they have crazy answers. The first clip was, you can find this clip. I go, what percent of the American population is transgender? And he says, I don't know, 20%? And I was like, okay, it's actually 0.5%. And then I asked this Trump supporter, what do you think about this whole movement like eradicate transgenderism? And he goes, no, that's way too far. Let people live how they want to live. I just personally think we should not keep it around my kids or keep it away from my kids or whatever. So that went viral. And essentially I was like, look it, you can talk to people at Trump rallies in a very human way. You don't have to like run circles around them and be condescending. And that started to go viral. That was the style I developed. So just to run back, I combined a lot of my skills in talking to people, editing, and I think it came together in a pretty satisfying way.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you know, there is, you know, one of the things that I think I fear about our sort of our digital driven political debate is that, and you're discovering this, the minute you talk to somebody supposedly on the other side, and you have a human to human contact, you suddenly realizes that the edges aren't so sharp. There may be disagreements, but it's rounded edges. Like you found the guy that said, "Oh, look, live and let live. Just don't do it around my kids." And you're like, "Okay, I understand why you say it that way, but that also means you're not an unempathetic person, right?
No, he
You've
gets it, yeah.
there's empathy in there, and we've got to sort of figure out a way, like we got to figure out a way to live together because we're going to disagree because that's sort of the beauty of this place."
A tactic that I started to pick up is I go up and I disarm them, and I'm just like, hey, I am a young dude. I'm trying to reach a middle ground. And then I start to wrap my ideas in more conservative rhetoric. So this one dude told me, and this is another viral clip on my Instagram. He said, let's stop funding Ukraine and let's put America first. So I rewrapped it. I'm like, funding Ukraine is how we put America first on the world stage. Think about this. We're stopping an enemy, Russia. We are securing the border of an ally. It helps our military because we're like restockpiling our equipment, sending them old equipment that we would dispose of anyways in an expensive way. By the end of it, he was like, wait a minute, it's economically beneficial for us. And I was like, yeah, dude. Now, the thing is, I think he went to the Trump rally right after and probably got re-brainwashed. So there is like a fundamental difference in reality that exists here. No matter how many conversations I have, they'll always go back to their media cycle, which we talk about, their media echo chamber. But these conversations are important. They're effing important. And I'm so sick of when people on my side say, it's not even worth talking to Joe Rogan. Why would any liberal go on there? And it's like, it is worth talking to Joe Rogan. Trust me, he's got a massive audience.
Let me ask you this. At 22, you've been doing this about 2 or 3 years now, right?
This exact thing, 2 years, yeah.
In these conversations, have you found yourself persuaded?
I wouldn't say persuaded in the sense that like a Trump supporter makes a really unique, like innovative point, but it absolutely introduces me to unique ways of thinking about the border, about this. And by the unique ways, it's generally some like slop that they saw on their Twitter feed, but absolutely having these conversations has opened my mind. And I'm trying to pull a specific example right now. But I would just say broadly, having a conversation with a wide array of people, number one, it builds empathy because a lot of these people are misled. I know people, this might be on the nose, but like Jim Jones would prey on vulnerable people. And a lot of times, Trump supporters, the deepest ones, have something in their life that's kind of going wrong and they try to channel that through Trump, like they're as if they're the victim. So there's a lot of like conversations I've had where I'm like, holy shit, this is opening my mind. But as regarding policy, not entirely. I'd have to think about it.
Well, there's that saying, it's easier to be conned than to convince somebody they've been conned.
Yeah. Or you can't reason someone out of a position they haven't reasoned themselves into in the first place. That kind of reminds me of some of the conversations I have.
Where do you feel like your style has worked and that you think others need to start adopting this? Because, the problem we have is our incentive structures don't incentivize, you're not allowed to be a moderate or you get booted out of either camp. You can't be a moderate and survive in MAGA, and you can't be a moderate and survive in what I would say is the digital Democratic Party. I'm not saying the real, the outside world, but it does feel as if there's not a lot of room to be stuck in the center left or the center right in the conversations being had online.
Yeah, so regarding my daily content, it's a little bit more openly partisan because I'm just talking about the news and injecting my opinion as opposed to when I'm kind of debating on the field. I cede ground on purpose to try to like pull them over to our side. But I think where I succeed, where other people on my side in particular could really succeed and really push, is not purity testing, having empathy with these conversations, and understanding that a lot of people are just misguided. And I see this in my audience a lot. The vast majority of my audience like agrees with my approach, but even sometimes people in my comment section again will be like, they'll say something like, "Why do you platform? Or why do you give
Platform.
air? Yeah,
There
why
it
do you
is.
platform?"
Platform. All right, I want to go down this road.
Or you know what? Someone said one time, "Why do you give air to Charlie Kirk?" And I responded, "I'm not giving air. Charlie Kirk is the air." This was like the month after the election. I was like, "They just won Congress entirely, the presidency. They basically have the Supreme Court." Charlie Kirk is the heir. I'm not giving him air by responding to his lies, you know?
It's interesting. I think one of the biggest mistakes collectively that whatever you want to call it, mainstream media, traditional media, and if, is this was the decision to deplatform Trump after January 6th. Not giving them access to Facebook, not giving them access to Twitter, not putting anybody that didn't certify January 6th right on TV. There was a lot of movement in that direction. It ended up actually blowing up in the in all of our collective faces because they just built an entirely separate ecosystem. And in some ways, we're in a worse position today, and I think we were on January 7th when we went down this road. But let me stop there. Do you agree with me or not on that?
Where I'd want to push back is that there's a difference between platforming versus responsibly platforming. So I think people were struggling with how to deal with the effing president of the United States in a
Totally agree.
top-down way, like top-down lying, pressuring officials and trying to get that. I think people were struggling with how to platform and how to approach that. There's an argument to be made that there was an overcorrection on the other side, but I think it's easy to post hoc make that judgment in the moment. The leader of the free world was making up these lies, and we didn't have the mechanisms to fact check him in an efficient way. So, I mean, was there maybe a different way to go about this? Sure, but I think responsibly platforming him in that time was so damn hard because, like, how do you
Well,
responsibly
but who
platform?
platformed him? I always sit here and say, and this is the question I'd say, are we platforming him or did the voters platform him?
Well, what you said, yeah, that's very true. What I was referring to in particular is you said some mainstream media made an intentional call to block him out,
Correct.
which for sure, but like they did that because they didn't know how to responsibly platform. If we could go back, I think they should have just relentlessly called out his lies, which they did, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's easy to retroactively look back.
Yeah, look, it is. And I've been given the position that I was sitting in for so long, I've constantly been trying to see what could we have done better? How could we have done this differently? How do you sort of have the First Amendment and at the same time be in a for-profit business? All these things, right? You sit there and I think the lesson I've taken away since is that you can't hope to eliminate censoring speech isn't going to be the way to win this, right? You just have to be, you just have, you just, we need to saturate the area with more truthful speech, more facts, right? The best way to beat bad speech is good speech. And now there are some issues that we can't control, which is big tech controls all of our distribution. Your distribution is not controlled by you, is it?
Not entirely. I mean, it's at the channels that I use are through certain platforms, yeah.
Right. And if what works on the what how the algorithms work on these platforms over time. And the question is, have you thought about how much do you change your commentary to make sure it fits the algorithm?
I have gotten better at not doing that. Here's the thing. There is definitely a way where you frame your videos to have algorithmic boosts. So, like, my titles are rather inflammatory at times, but my commentary is true to me, I'd say. Like, when I hop on and I
Do
make a
you worry
video.
about that? That it like, because I look, we're doing this. I sit here. I've sort of embraced this idea too, right? Which
Yeah.
is my commentary is one thing. The headlines sometimes are portraying me saying something that, maybe I'm not quite saying it that way. But it's about you're trying to grab audience, right? What's that line for you?
You balance the trade-off between how am I maximizing my reach without actually giving away any integrity. So at times, I made a Russia and Ukraine video. One time, it was just about Russia and Ukraine. It was when Ukraine did a surprise attack with 40 different drones, or no, they hit 40 different bombers with a bunch of different drones. And I was going to title it like Ukraine pulls off like historic stunt or whatever. But I had some really good commentary about all the ground that Trump has ceded that led to this point. So I titled it something like Zelensky's Surprise Attack Catches Putin Off Guard. It's a little bit clickbaity and in your face. And what I decided there is I'm sacrificing a little bit of like clickbaitiness, but that video got 300,000 views and it would have gotten 30,000 views otherwise. 30,000
No,
is still
I get
great.
it. I get
But there's
it.
a trade-off where you maximize your reach. At some point, there are certain ways where you're just like straight up lying. There's a line that I don't cross. But I think I'm comfortable with maximizing my reach and growing at this rate. And
Put it this way, my son loves to accuse some of his friends, who will do some innocuous TikTok video that has nothing to do with anything political, or but then they'll tag Fox News and Trump. because it knows that TikTok somehow it gets extra traction. And the fact is, every high schooler's figured this out, right?
Yeah.
And the point is that what is that? How do we deal with that? And it, you know, should that be, should a tech company not, you know, work that way? Should these algorithms not work that way? I think we all would agree that they shouldn't, but we don't really have an alternative to that yet.
Yeah, and it's hard too when there's two coalitions trying to beat each other. So on the right, they've built this vast media ecosystem where they're constantly carpet bombing the information landscape with lies, in my opinion. I mean, it seems like when I look at Benny Johnson's feed or Charlie Kirk's feed, they're
No,
saying
it's
that
intentionally misleading. I always say
it.
it's not on the up and up, and that's the point. Sometimes people aren't on the up and up because they really believe this sort of convoluted theory of the case, right?
Yeah.
But that's not a majority of
They're all
of
claiming that Trump right now took complete and total victory with the ceasefire overnight. When he
right.
called it the 12-day war, now we're on day 13, bro. That's not a victory yet. He's got a little bit of egg on his face right now. So they're all claiming a different reality. We don't do that. We don't lie. But when they're constantly carpet bombing the feed with a different reality, we have to punch back with something that is equivalent to that. And sometimes it means my titles shout at you, or sometimes it means my thumbnails have yellow text or whatever, which, yeah, unfortunately, that's the way the algorithm works. But we can't keep ceding ground to, I think, complete lies about reality.
Do you believe this is more an information war or something else that we're in the middle of right now?
I'd say it's an information war with external actors as well. I'm a big believer that Russia, Iran, I mean, other countries, they are trying to intentionally stoke the flames of whatever information war is already happening.
I believe
I
that too.
mean, Vladimir Putin won't have to spend a single dollar putting like troops on the ground in North America. He literally has people. I mean, I can almost guarantee that one dude who shot, not even dude, he's like a monster, who shot the two Democratic Congress members in Minnesota, I can almost guarantee he was inundated with Russian propaganda on a daily basis. How much of a win is it for Vladimir Putin that he's able to have somebody like his own little agent in the United States that he just read too much propaganda, he's impressionable and radicalized, and he goes out and commits acts of violence? And that further splits the country because you have Senator Mike Lee on Twitter then making jokes about it and stuff. So, I mean, I think there's an intentional information war happening from the outside to divide Americans. And I think sometimes not to make it super one-sided, but it is a top-down effort from the right to continue posting and like waging this information war. We have the president reposting stuff about Joe Biden being a what was it? He died 5 years ago, and now he's just a
Just
robot.
crazy stuff,
It's
yeah.
like this information war, and yes, we have people on our side who spread disinformation too, and we try to push back on that.
Well, that's been my concern. Are you worried that some are like, if you can't beat them, join them? Well, those tactics are working, and I'm sure you've noticed some people who you may agree with trying those same tactics. And I think, you know, I get nervous about it because I think, oh, geez, this is not going to end well.
You can't play by one-sided rules, though. It's like if Donald Trump and the Republican Party are
You sound like campaign finance reform. But you know, whenever somebody wants to do campaign finance reform, the first pushback is, well, you can't tie one arm behind your back. And then you're like, well, guess what? Both parties are bought by billionaires. One feels bad about it, one doesn't. But what's the difference,
And I
right?
guess that justification can be used to just endlessly race to the bottom. Like, look at what
That's my
they're doing.
concern, exactly.
But I heard this analogy one time, and this is a little bit rough. It's like norms are like consent in politics. If one side removes consent, the other side, it's like you can't have one side playing by it, because then at that point, the Republican Party is continuously just breaking the rule book. Like, for example, remember when Garland, of course you remember, I don't know why I'm asking that. I'm way younger than you. But like when Garland was going to be a Supreme Court justice and, you know, Mitch McConnell intentionally obstructed, but then a few years later, that rule book was all of a sudden pulled away. It's like we're playing by these one-sided rules, and we don't have to race to the bottom and call people nicknames all of the time. But I'd like to see a Democrat who's like punches back like Trump. Like, I want to see a Democrat who is kind of a little bit of an asshole and calls Republicans what they should be called.
You know, it's funny you say that. I called, I said, you know, Trump is intentionally an asshole. And that's actually part, I actually think it's part of his appeal. Right. I think you had conservatives who felt that Bush was too mealy mouth, right? That Romney was too soft. They wanted that. Is that where you think the Dems are going to go in 28? I mean, I'm very curious where, history says we're going to go with somebody with the exact opposite personality of Trump, because that's what we've done when we've gone to new presidents after we usually take a pre we our new president usually has some characteristic the previous president did not have. You're potentially arguing that no, maybe Democrats go find their own version of an a-hole.
Not even just an a-hole, but I think when we see Gavin Newsom having very pointed jabs at Donald Trump on TV, like surgical jabs on Twitter, it's very satisfying in a way that like other Democratic leaders, they haven't been able to scratch that itch. So we don't need like a pure asshole, but I mean somebody who can kind of like throw a dart and hit right there, boom, they hit Republicans surgically. But I think that what I always say is that in 2004, when Obama spoke at the DNC, nobody knew he would take the party by storm 4 years later. Even in the primaries, Hillary Clinton was still like, it was neck and neck at the end there. So in 2012, Republicans did a playbook where they said, we need to moderate. No one knew 4 years later Trump was going to take the party by storm. So after this massive loss, I think the best leaders are going to rise from the ashes. It could just be Newsom. Maybe it's just like a Newsom, and maybe it's Buttigieg. Maybe we already know the person. Or maybe this leader is just kind of making a name for themselves, and in 4 years they'll come out with an explosive campaign. I really don't know.
Do you think the Democratic Party speaks to you? Speaks to you or for you or not right now? Where's your head on that?
I see a vision. I see the underlying ideals of the Democratic Party. What I want the Democratic Party to be, like the version of it in my head, yes. I am for, personal liberty, so the right to express yourself if you want to get like married as a gay person, or if you're a trans person, you want to express yourself, marry who you want. I like liberalism in its rawest form. You should be able to, I mean, ideally own a gun with also common sense gun measures. I think the Democratic Party should be a little bit more punchy. That's how it doesn't speak to me. Here's the thing. Oftentimes it has a lot of the social justice things that I like and I appreciate and enjoy, but without the punch that we need to actually consolidate power and bring equality there. So, I mean, like, I think the Democratic Party in its current form should be a little bit more edgy while also sticking up for core liberal, like liberalism. So in its current form, I don't know. Yes, sure. The ideal version of it in my head does, but it's kind of lacking a little bit in reality.
What I mean, when you watch this mess at the DNC, what do you see?
Which mess?
Well,
Oh,
the
with David Hogg?
whole thing, the leadership, David Hogg, how they're going about it. I mean, look, I think the election itself featured a bunch of technocrats, party operatives, not necessarily somebody going, hey, do we need to rethink the entire brand? Instead, it was a very tactical. The election itself was tactical. So you, no matter who won, you were going to get a tactician, and I knew a tactician wasn't going to appease the most fired up rank and file, and that's proven out to be true.
I would be okay with an uprooting of the DNC, kind of like how Trump did it with the RNC, but not exactly. He kind of took it over through brute force, like through all those 8, 10 years. But I mean, if the DNC wants to get rid of a lot of the strategists or contractors that it used the past election cycle, I wouldn't be opposed. I think it is a bit of a mess. I think that we're kind of finding our way. We're leaderless right now. It's like we're just a ship in the ocean that's rudderless. We have no direction or no leader, and we need to find someone. If that means someone elevates from the ashes and sort of takes over the party or takes over the DNC, then yeah, that's fine.
I personally look, I was your age during the right post Dukakis debacle. All right, that was when I went from high school to college, and that fight inside the Democratic Party, when it was happening in the moment, there were all these predictions of doom and gloom. Oh, it's infighting. It's going to be terrible for the party. By the way, very similar to what many of us incorrectly said about 2015, 2016 Republicans. Oh my God, they're not united. They're fighting. There's no way they're going to be united. He's an automatic loser. 10 years later, the guy's the most influential president, arguably, since FDR. So Bill Clinton came out of these ashes and he rebranded the Democratic Party in such a way they didn't lose the popular vote, but once in 30 years. So I think both examples to me point to, you know what the party needs? A good fight.
We do. And I think that, you know, there's this video that popped up in my feed recently. It was Trump in 2016. And he was on stage at the Republican primaries, and they were like, raise your hand if you promise not to run against the Republican if you make it. And he's the sole person who raises his hand. And everyone boos, and Bret Baier starts laughing. He's like, are you sure, sir? Now, 10 years later, Trump owns Bret Baier and everyone in that room. And I say that to just make the point that we kind of need somebody with a little bit of balls in the Democratic Party. And I don't say this out of like admiration for Trump, but what he did to the Republican Party is effing insane in this course of time. So we do need a rebranding in the same way that Bill Clinton did. We need someone to ride in a tank with a really big helmet so we can rebrand the party after.
You know, it's funny about that, though. It's like, so my mother has this saying, like she says, I'm a Democrat because I'd like to disagree with people. And so in her mind, that the Republicans were easier to organize and to move. Do you think the Democrats are going to be as easy to organize and shift the way Trump took advantage of Republicans?
No, there's this problem we run into where a lot of our loudest voices don't even vote for Democrats at all. So with Republicans, like rank and file, they line up at the end of the election or right when the election is happening. It'll be Matt Gaetz to Marjorie Taylor Greene to the neocons, everybody lining up. But with Democrats, a lot of times when people think of Democrats protesting, they think of like pro-Palestinian activists, which is fine. Absolutely, they should have the right to protest. But a lot of these people don't even vote for the party. The largest person on the left is like the largest streamer. His name is Hassan Piker. I'm sure you've heard of him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know him. He's a cool dude. But he didn't even tell his fans to vote Kamala. He was not even like a rank and file Democrat who was like, go vote Kamala. But he somehow speaks for the Democratic Party. He's one of our loudest activists. So the question is, will we be able to bring the coalition together with a strong enough candidate? Yes. But we oftentimes run into this thing where like we have people on the fringes of the party that seem to be kind of running it without voting for us. And we just need to get rid of that and build a different coalition, I think.
Is it possible that both parties are too big for their coalitions, and that this has just been a folly, and we'd be better off if we were a four-party system?
It could be, yeah. It definitely could be. I think that a lot of people have pitched that. I mean, Elon Musk seems to want to have a third party right now. I mean, I don't know if it's going to happen, but I could see a system that works in other countries working here. But it's just, I mean, how would we ever even get there? Who would dictate this? Like the idea.
No, you have to change all your, the problem we have is ballot access, right? The duopoly prevents, and this is always why all the fights happen inside the parties, right? For ideological control. Who's going to have control? The business interests, the populist interests, the progressive interest, right? You know, all these fights happen internally, where if you had the multi-party system, well, party might collapse, right? Like the Tories are gone. I don't know if they come back for a while, right? And there's a new right-wing party. The Israeli Labor Party collapsed. And in its place were other sort of anti-BB parties, not necessarily left parties, but they were coalitions of anti-BB parties. So, you know, in countries where there's multi-parties, these fights happen outside the parties. With us, it's all takes place internally, which I don't know whether that I think that's why governing is so difficult, even when one party has control of everything.
Yeah, I guess it depends if you want like the rotation of the other countries or sort of the rubber band of the U.S., where it's like if one party pulls in this direction, the rubber band kind of pulls back in the other direction.
Usually
like
does, right.
People who think that wokeness went too far in 2020, if you believe that, which like core tenets of that could be true, then now we're having a huge counter reaction. And it's like, right. What's going to happen next? Yeah, so it just depends.
So do you have a favorite yet for 28?
I interviewed Secretary Pete Buttigieg, and, you know, he's a great guy. I mean, I like a lot where he's going with AI. I think AI will be a big issue heading into 2028.
Fear of it? Do you think it's fear that's going to make it a big issue?
Whichever party gets there first and talks about utilizing it and controlling it for the worker will, I think, win like the vote on AI. So people are scared, but it depends on how we talk about it. We can reframe it to be pro-worker, I think. I like Buttigieg. Newsom won me over a lot, jabbing at Trump. I don't know if he'd be a good national candidate, because there's one line where it's like, do you want your state to look like California? Yeah. And a lot of people that might even though California is very nice, it might bring up like a
Yeah. Now, some things have gotten so stereotyped that it's hard to break them. San Francisco is a stereotype to people that live in the Midwest. And now, guess what? When they go visit San Francisco, they think it's a really cool city. But the stereotype, oh no, we're not having that, right? Whatever that is. And I've always thought that's going to be a big anchor for him to drag around, the
I'm
former
rooting
mayor
for
of San Francisco.
Biden in 2028. I think he should make a comeback. No, that's actually, but no,
Robot Biden, right?
my grandpa does the same thing with Florida though. He always calls Florida like a shithole. He's like, it's a MAGA. He's a big CNN, like CNN head. He's always like, Florida's a MAGA shithole. And I'm like, dude, we've been to Florida like in the past 5 years. It's so nice there. And he's like, no, it's just all MAGA. It's a MAGA shithole. I'm like, okay, you just hate Florida. If you hate DeSantis, just say that. Like,
Well, that's what I hate is that, like, if a state goes from red to blue, automatically there's this like stereotype that gets, or vice versa, right? That people that don't live there ascribe to it, right? I'm a Floridian by birth. I go back there all the time. Florida, I always say Florida is like the coffee pot, the sediment of a coffee pot, right? We get everybody's sediment. We get America's sediment. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's not so good.
I like Florida personally. I also like California. Chicago, though, shout out Chicago. That's where the HQ is being built, and it's beautiful.
Before I let you go, where'd you grow up?
Indiana, in
Yeah.
Northwest Indiana.
Northwest Indiana. Do you feel like a Chicagoan or an Indianapolis guy? Like, what's the bigger pull? It's like if you live in New Jersey, sometimes it's Philly or is it New York? For you, what's the bigger pull? Indianapolis or Chicago?
More Chicago, because I grew up in Northwest Indiana, so like the upper left tip, which was an hour away from
So all your
Chicago.
local sports were Chicago. You didn't get the Indiana sports.
And
Interesting.
then when I went to college in Chicago, I went to college in Northwest Indiana for 1 year, transferred to Chicago, DePaul, dropped out for the media company. Now I'm in Chicago, scaling this baby up.
All right. Adam, this was great. We promised a solid half hour. We went probably 31, 32 minutes, but I'm gonna keep to time. And I know you've got how many days do you how do you let me ask this last question because I'm struggling with it myself as a newcomer to the content creation space, or at least owning my content. I've been creating content for years just for other people. How do you take a day off?
It's really hard lately. I go 7 days a week, and while there, I was editing and producing and doing all of my own stuff. But
You're
as
going
I'm
to burn
scaling,
yourself out doing that, brother.
I was at the campaign season. During the campaign cycle, I burnt myself out. But once I started building a team and learning how to delegate, it helped a lot. Now I'm building something we're calling it Mockler Media. I have an editor, I have contributors. I'm adding other faces to my channel. So when I want to go grab dinner with my family, I have a team around me helping support me. And it's all just, I'm trying to, I dropped out of college, but I'm getting a business degree. I'm getting a degree in delegation, in making sure I'm managing people, managing expectations on a daily basis. And
Look, the college thing. Look, I didn't finish my degree. I have all these credits, and I didn't finish. But the point of college is to figure out what you're going to do. Some people figure it out in the first year or two of college. Some people need 6 years, 8 years. Right? It is about a pathway to the next step. And if you figured it out, don't feel defensive.
Oh no, we're just starting here. But I have a feeling we'll chat more throughout this next year.
I would like that. Good to get to know you, Adam. Appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me on.